Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Colorado Business Digest, narrated by Mike Hesser, with sources including ColoradoBiz.com, CBS News, Denver 7, and the Leeds School of Business. Our first article is titled, Union Pacific Norfolk Southern Back $85 Billion Rail Merger, dated November 14, 2025. In the center of this ad, is an ad that reads, Meet the faces behind the care. Nevine saves businesses $10,000 per claim through return to work. Pinnacle. Shareholders of Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern backed the railroad's proposed $85 billion merger to create the nation's first coast-to-coast rail network. Roughly 99% of both railroads' shareholders voted to support the largest rail merger in history on Friday, but the U.S. Service Transportation Board must still approve it before the deal can be completed. Union Pacific CEO Jim Vena said, Our shareholders see the value and understand this merger will unlock new opportunities to enhance service growth and innovation. Vena has said he hopes to file the formal merger application either late November or early December, which will initiate the lengthy review process. The merger has won the support of the largest rail union and hundreds of shippers, but chemical manufacturers and competing railroad BNSF have raised concerns that it would hurt competition and lead to higher rates. Donald Trump said after meeting with Vena in the Oval Office that the deal sounds good to him. Vena has argued that the merger is great for America because it would enable the railroad to deliver goods more quickly and help the companies that rely on its deliveries of raw materials and finished products. The proposed merger announced this summer was designed to link Union Pacific's vast rail network in the West with Norfolk's rails that crisscross the eastern United States. The combined railroad would include more than 50,000 miles of track in 43 states with connections to major ports on both coasts. The railroads argued that this merger would streamline deliveries of raw materials and goods nationwide by eliminating delays when shipments are handed off between railroads. The STB will closely scrutinize the merger to determine whether it meets the very high bar the board established for railroad deals after previous industry consolidation led to massive backups and snarled traffic. A group of nine Republican attorneys general sent a letter to the STB on Friday urging regulators to thoroughly review the deal because they are concerned about the potential impact of higher shipping costs, which could kneecap American companies' ability to compete with foreign manufacturers. Earlier this month, a bipartisan group of 18 U.S. senators made a similar request to the board. We write to express our concerns that the proposed merger between Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern will result in undue market concentration that stifles competition and therefore creates higher prices, lower reliability, and less innovation at the expense of America's manufacturers and, ultimately, America's consumers, the attorneys general wrote. Many investors believe that if the deal is approved, CSX will need to find a merger partner to compete effectively. But the other major railroads, BNSF, CPKC, and Canadian National, have all said they believe forging cooperative agreements between railroads makes more sense than a merger. But CSX still went out and hired a new CEO with a background in mergers this fall to lead its railroad. Vena and Norfolk Southern CEO Mark George have both said they are optimistic that this deal will get approved under Trump's pro-business administration. The Service Transportation Board is supposed to be independent, but Trump fired the only member who was opposed to Canadian Pacific's acquisition of Kansas City Southern Railroad 2 years ago. That should allow Trump to appoint two new members of the five-person board, although Robert Primus has sued to challenge his firing. Union Pacific offered $20 billion in cash and one share of its stock to complete the deal. Norfolk Southern shareholders would receive one UP share and $88.82 in cash for each of their shares as part of the deal, which values NS at roughly $320 per share. Norfolk Southern closed at just over $260 a share earlier this month before the first reports emerged speculating about the deal, which includes a $2.5 billion breakup fee. Our next article is titled Building Community from the Ground Up, dated November 14, 2025. When Forefront Renovations was founded in 2022, it merged from one woman's deep understanding of the construction industry and her determination to make it better. After years of working for a general contractor, first in marketing and later running the multifamily department, Leslie Kinson recognized major gaps in organization and efficiency across the field. She set out to change that, creating a business built on structure, integrity, and community relationships, and Forefront Renovations was born. Forefront Renovations specializes in multifamily and commercial projects spanning student housing, senior living, and tenant improvements for community centers and other specialty facilities. The company handles everything from clubhouse remodels and upgraded common areas to exterior improvements like dog parks and courtyards. Alongside its multifamily work, Forefront has steadily expanded into single-family renovations, partnering with local real estate brokerages and investment groups to revitalize homes across the Denver metro area and breathing life into existing structures rather than tearing them down for new development. Rather than employing a large staff, Forefront operates through a network of trusted specialty subcontractors, plumbers, electricians, and concrete teams, many of whom have been with the company since its earliest days. That tight-knit structure allows projects to run smoothly while keeping the focus on relationships, not just results. In September 2025, Forefront Renovations was awarded the $50,000 Progressive Insurance Driving Small Business Forward grant, a national award that supports small businesses. In its fourth consecutive year, the grant program has distributed over $2.5 million to help small businesses address challenges such as accessing capital and expand and scale their operations. For Kinson, the grant came at a pivotal time, helping the team invest in additional work vehicles and resources that stabilized operations and supported the crew that had worked tirelessly using their own trucks and trailers. "It was a true game changer," Kinson said. "It gave us the breathing room to grow while continuing to take care of our people." Operating along Colorado's Front Range, the Colorado Springs and Fountain to Fort Collins, Loveland, and Greeley, Forefront remains committed to preserving the state's architectural charm and history. In a time when large developers often level neighborhoods for new builds, Forefront's approach is refreshingly local, working with neighborhood suppliers, tradespeople, and clients who care about keeping Colorado communities authentic and livable. As the company continues to grow by double digits each year, its focus remains steady, expanding its single-family renovation division, deepening partnerships with locally based asset management groups, and leading with purpose. "You can't always compete with the big guys," Kinson said, "but you can choose to improve your community, love your team, and do work that makes a real difference." Included with this article is an ad that reads, "Energy you can count on, Colorado Natural Gas." Our next article is titled, "Judge to Approve Purdue Opioid Settlement with Sacklers," dated November 14, 2025. In the center of this article is an ad that reads, "Innovative Counsel, National Reach, Local Insight, Meet the Modern Law Firm, Taft, Sherman, and Howard." A federal bankruptcy court judge on Friday said he will approve OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma's latest deal to settle thousands of lawsuits over the toll of opioids that includes some money for thousands of victims of the epidemic. The deal, overseen by U.S. bankruptcy judge Sean Lane, would require members of the Sackler family who own the company to contribute up to $7 billion over 15 years. The new agreement replaces one that the U.S. Supreme Court rejected last year, finding it would have improperly protected family members against future lawsuits. The judge said he would explain his decision in a hearing on Tuesday. It's among the largest in a series of opioid settlements brought by state and local governments against drug makers, wholesalers, and pharmacies. It could close a long chapter, and maybe the entire book, on a legal odyssey over efforts to hold the company to account for its role in an opioid crisis connected to 900,000 deaths in the U.S. since 1999, including from heroin and illicit fentanyl. Lawyers and judges involved have described it as one of the most complicated bankruptcies in U.S. history. Ultimately, attorneys representing Purdue, cities, states, counties, Native American tribes, people with addiction, and others were nearly unanimous in urging the judge to approve the bankruptcy plan for Purdue, which filed for protection 6 years ago as it faced lawsuits with claims that grew to trillions of dollars. Purdue lawyer Marshall Huebner told the judge that he wishes he could conjure up $40 trillion or $100 trillion to compensate those who have suffered unfathomable loss. But without that possibility, he said, the plan is entirely lawful, does the greatest good for the greatest number in the shortest available time frame. The saga has been emotional and full of contentious arguments between many groups that took Purdue to court, often exposing a possible mismatch between the quest for justice and the practical role of bankruptcy court. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected a previous deal because it said it was improper for Sackler family members to receive immunity from lawsuits over opioids. In the new arrangement, entities that don't opt into the settlement can sue them. Family members are collectively worth billions, but much of their assets are held in trusts and offshore accounts that would be hard to access through lawsuits. This time, the government groups involved have reached an even fuller consensus, and there's been mostly subdued opposition from individuals. Out of more than 54,000 personal injury victims who voted on whether the plan should be accepted, just 218 said no. A larger number of people in that group didn't vote. Unlike with other proceedings, there were no protests outside the courthouse. A handful of objectors spoke during the three-day hearing, sometimes interrupting the judge. Some said that only the victims, not the states or other government entities, should receive the settlement funds. Others wanted that judge to find the members of the Sackler family criminally liable, something Lane said is beyond the scope of the bankruptcy court, but that the settlement doesn't bar prosecutors from pursuing. A Florida woman whose husband struggled with addiction after being given OxyContin following an accident told the court that the deal isn't enough. The natural laws of karma suggest the Sacklers and Purdue Pharma should pay for what they've done, Pamela Bartz Halachek said via video. A flood of lawsuits filed by the government entities against Purdue and other lawmakers, drug wholesalers, and pharmacy chains began about a decade ago. Most of the other ones have already settled for a total of about $50 billion, with most of the money going to fight the opioid crisis. There's no mechanism for tracking where it all goes, or an overarching requirement to evaluate whether the spending is effective. Those hit the hardest generally haven't had a say. In addition to contributing cash, members of the Sackler family would formally relinquish ownership of the company. None have been on its board or received payments since 2018. Unlike a similar hearing 4 years ago, no one was called to testify in this week's hearing. The company would change its name to Noah Pharma and appoint new overseers who would dedicate future profits to battling the opioid crisis. That could happen in the spring of 2026. Family members would be barred from involvement in companies that sell opioids anywhere in the world. and they would not have their names added to institutions in exchange for charitable contributions. The name has already been removed from museums and universities. Company documents, including many that would normally be subject to lawyer-client privilege, are to be made public. Unlike the other major opioid settlements, individuals harmed by Purdue's products would be in line for some money as part of the settlement. About $850 million would be set aside for them, with more than $100 million of that amount carved out to help children born dealing with opioid withdrawal. All funds for the individual victims will be delivered next year. About 139,000 people have active claims for the money. Many of them, however, have not shown proof that they were prescribed Purdue's opioids and will receive nothing. Assuming about half of the individual claimants would qualify, lawyers expect that those with prescriptions for at least 6 months would receive about $16,000 each, and those with prescriptions for a shorter period would get about $8,000 before legal fees that would reduce what people actually receive. One woman who had a family member suffer from opioid addiction told the court by video Thursday that the settlement doesn't help people with substance abuse disorder. "Tell me how you guys can sleep at night knowing people are going to get so little money they can't do anything with," asked Lorene Ferrante of Staten Island, New York. Christopher Shore, a lawyer representing a group of individual victims, said in court Friday that the settlement is a better deal than taking on Sackler family members in court. "Some Sacklers are bad people," he said, "but the reality is that sometimes bad people win in litigation. Most of the money is to go to state and local governments to be used in their efforts to mitigate the damage of the opioid epidemic. Overdose death numbers have been dropping in the last few years, a decline experts believe is partly due to the impact of settlement dollars." Our next article is titled, "Peregrine Energy Secures Funding for $317 Million Storage Project," dated November 14, 2025. Peregrine Energy Solutions has secured new funding to support construction of a $317 million battery energy storage project, the company announced this week. Peregrine closed a preferred equity commitment with the Build More Clean Energy and also finalized financing with a group of lenders. First Citizens Bank and Societe Generale served as coordinated lead arrangers. Siemens Financial Services joined as a joint lead arranger, and East West Bank participated as an additional lender. Founded in April 2022 by Hagen Lee, Peregrine develops utility-scale battery storage projects across multiple U.S. power markets. The company reached a financing agreement with funds managed by AB CarVal in 2023 and has since built a pipeline of 15 gigawatt hours of storage in regions including SPP, MISO, ERCOT, PJM, and WECC. Two of its battery energy storage projects are currently under construction in Texas. The announcement follows several financing rounds earlier this year. In March, Peregrine secured a $53 million preferred equity commitment from Buildmore and a $115 million bridge financing facility from First Citizens Bank and Nomura Securities International, Inc. In October, the company raised $130 million from a consortium that included the Ministry of Environment of South Korea, IMM Investment, Wuri Private Equity Asset Management, and funds managed by AB CarVal. "We are thrilled to announce the closing of our second project financing this year," said Reed Strand, Senior Vice President of Finance at Peregrine. "As we continue to accelerate developments across our portfolio, we are thankful for continued support from leading investors and lenders." David Haug, financer and CEO of Buildmore, said the partnership reflects the strength of the pipeline project. "Buildmore is once again pleased to partner with the Peregrine team to provide preferred equity and underpin bridge financing on another high-quality ERCOT BSS project," he said. We appreciate the creativity and innovation of Hagen Lee's development and finance teams. Mike LaRusso, Managing Director and Group Head for First Citizen Bank's Energy Finance Group, said the bank is committed to helping expand energy storage capacity. This represents our second financing with Peregrine, and we look forward to continuing to support them as they grow their portfolio, he said. Kevin Kartoski, a vice president in the Energy Plus Group for Societe Generale, said the transaction underscores Peregrine's progress. This transaction marks an important milestone in Peregrine's development, and we are happy to be able to lead financings that support their continued growth, he said. Our next article is titled, Retail Sales Rebound in October Ahead of the Holidays, dated November 10, 2025. Retail sales rose in October, posting both monthly and annual gains as consumers began spending ahead of the holiday season, according to the CNBC/NRF Retail Monitor, powered by Affinity Solutions and released Monday by the National Retail Federation. Retail sales grew in October as consumers geared up for the holiday season, NRF President and CEO Matthew Shea said. Recent economic data has been mixed, yet consumer spending remains solid, supported by wage growth outpacing inflation, historically low unemployment, and wealth effects from strong stock market valuations. These factors point to continued momentum heading into the holidays as consumers focus on family, friends, and finding value to make their budgets go further. Total retail sales, excluding automobile dealers and gasoline stations, increased 0.6% seasonally adjusted from September and 5% year over year, according to the Retail Monitor. That compares with a 0.66 monthly decrease and a 5.42% annual gain in September. Core retail sales, which exclude restaurants, auto dealers, and gas stations, also rose 0.6% month over month and 4.89% year over year. In September, core sales declined 0.49% from the previous month and rose 5.72% from a year earlier. For the first 10 months of 2025, total sales were up 5.11% year over year, while core sales grew 5.28%. The NRF projects holiday sales this year will increase between 3.7% and 4.2% compared with 2024, surpassing $1 trillion. Unlike survey-based estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau, the Retail Monitor draws on anonymized credit and debit card data compiled by Affinity Solutions and does not require later revisions. October sales rose in all but two of the nine retail categories year over year, led by digital products, clothing, and sporting goods. Monthly gains were also recorded in most sectors. Some category highlights included 1. Digital products, including ebooks and games, rose 2.02% month over month and 22.39% year over year. Clothing and accessories stores gained 1.42% month over month and 7.89% year over year. Sporting goods, hobby, music, and bookstores were up 0.09% month over month and 7.19% year over year. General merchandise stores climbed 0.58% month over month and 6.99% year over year. Electronics and appliance stores rose 0.13% month over month and 6.58% year over year. Grocery and beverage stores increased 0.59% month over month and 4.08% year over year. Shea said the latest data shows steady consumer resilience despite inflation pressures and economic uncertainty, positioning retailers for a strong holiday season. Our next article is titled Jeffco EDC Honors 2025 Gateways Award Winners, dated November 14, 2025. The Jefferson County Economic Development Corporation announced the winners of the 2025 Gateways Awards, recognizing people, projects, and partnerships that strengthen the county's economy and community over the past year. More than 300 business, civic, and community leaders attended the event at the Social Capital Events Center in Arvada. The celebration was presented by host sponsor J.E. Dunn Construction. The Gateways shine a light on the partnerships that fuel economic vitality in Jefferson County, said Carrie Kelly, president and CEO of Jeffco EDC. These winners are proving that progress is not achieved alone. It is built through shared vision, creative problem solving, and a deep commitment to community. The award winners included Project of the Year, Clayworks, Entrepreneur of the Year, Freedom Tracks, Community Partner of the Year, Red Rocks Community College, Making Good Happen Impact Award, Terramo BCT, Sustainability Project of the Year, Austere Environmental, Policy Champion, Bud Starker, and the Jeffco Leadership Award, Retired Chief Don Lombardi of the West Metro Fire Protection District. Tony Giarantano, chair of the Jeffco EDC Board of Directors and president of the commercial lending operations at First Bank, said the event highlighted the strength of the county's business community. The Gateways are about celebrating the people and organizations who elevate Jefferson County, Giarantano said. This year's winners represent the best of our community. Kelly said the awards also serve as a springboard for the organization's next phase. We are moving forward with long-range strategic planning, deeper regional collaboration, and new initiatives designed to elevate how we serve our partners and communities in the region, she said. Our focus is on telling Jeffco's story, expanding our reach, enhancing our visibility, and ensuring that every business and community in Jefferson County has the opportunity to thrive. The Gateways Awards have emerged as one of the region's leading celebrations of collaboration, innovation, and leadership, uniting the efforts of Jeffco EDC, the West Metro Chamber, and Leadership Jeffco to strengthen economic and community vitality across the county. Our next article is titled, Cleo Parker Robinson Center Hits $25 Million Milestone in Denver, dated November 14, 2025. The Cleo Parker Robinson Center for the Healing Arts has reached a major fundraising milestone in its capital campaign, surpassing $25 million in construction commitments. The new 25,000-square-foot wing recently received its temporary certificate of occupancy, marking a significant step toward the center's long-planned expansion. The addition, designed by Fentress Architects and built by Mortenson, sits next to the organization's historic headquarters at the National Historic Landmark Shorter AME site in Denver's Five Points neighborhood. Staff, performers, and students are preparing for the 34th season of Granny Dances to a Holiday Drum, which will be the final production staged in the original CPRD Theater. In December 2021, we announced our acquisition of the historic Shorter AME facility, once home to Denver's oldest African-American church and our sacred space, said Malik Robinson, president and CEO of Cleo Parker Robinson Dance. Since this became our headquarters in 1988, the community has embraced our space of art and belonging. Today, we announce that this new facility expansion is securely rooted with the financial support of our beloved village. Robinson said the organization continues to build a foundation of long-term financial stability and emphasized that supporters can still participate in the campaign. Any gift is welcome, from grassroots giving to sponsoring theater seats through the final steps to completion, he said. The building's east-facing solar panels incorporate LABA notation, the choreography notation system used to describe or transcribe Mary Don't You Weep, part of Cleo Parker Robinson's masterwork, Spiritual Suite. The piece was created for the first national celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday in 1986. The brilliant facility designed by Fentress welcomes the light into our new sacred space, said Cleo Parker Robinson, founder and artistic director. It reflects the light carried by our ancestors, founders, dancers, artists, staff, students, board members, and decades of volunteers and supporters who continue to build what we have today. Together, we are capturing light and creativity for a new era of belonging in dance and healing arts in our global village. Capital Campaign Chair Lisa Hogan said CPRD's impact extends well beyond dance. Cleo Parker Robinson Dance is so much more than a world-class dance organization, she said. It is a place of belonging, inspiration, and aspiration toward our better selves. Supporters stayed with us through rising post-pandemic costs and donated more than double our original $11 million goal. Hogan said nearly 200 individuals, families, foundations, and government partners contributed to the milestone. More than half of all individual donors came from the African American community. CPRD also created two giving societies, the Sankofa Society for gifts between $50,000 and $99,000, and the Aya Society for gifts of $100,000 and above. The organization will celebrate the new facility with public events scheduled during Denver's annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebrations. The new wing doubles CPRD's space and includes a 240-seat performance venue, four new dance studios, energy-efficient exterior fins, solar panels that generate power and display, Laba notation choreography, updated dressing rooms and locker rooms, an outdoor north-facing deck, a reception area, cafe, and expanded office space, a two-story glass atrium connecting the new design with the historic structure. The CPRD Theater and Studios will be available for rental beginning in January 2026, expanding opportunities for community arts, rehearsals, and events. Our next article is titled, Colorado AI Act, How Employers Can Prepare for 2026, dated November 11, 2025. Nearly every business today uses artificial intelligence in some form, from resume screeners to loan underwriting tools. Recent research shows that more than half of U.S. employers already use AI in their HR and decision-making processes, and one 2024 study finding that 65% rely on AI tools in hiring and workforce management. That's why Colorado made national headlines by becoming the first state to pass a comprehensive Artificial Intelligence Act. The bill, which is titled Consumer Protections for Artificial Intelligence, becomes effective February 1, 2026, and regulates so-called high-risk AI systems. Under the Colorado Artificial Intelligence Act, or CAIA, organizations must demonstrate that their AI systems are transparent, consistent, and unbiased. Colorado's approach reflects what we often see in land use and business regulation. The goal isn't to stop innovation, it's to make sure it's built on fairness and accountability. High-risk AI includes systems that help make decisions about hiring, promotion, and discipline of employees, tenant screening and housing eligibility, loan and credit approvals, insurance coverage decisions, and educational access and performance evaluation. Employers, local governments, and nonprofits across Boulder Valley and Northern Colorado are being urged to start preparing now for the new AI rules rather than waiting until 2026. Step 1, map your AI footprint. Understand where AI is already built into your operations. From predictive scheduling to applicant screening, many tools already qualify under the Act. Catalog your systems and ask your vendors hard questions about how they function. Step 2, revisit vendor agreements. Even if a third-party vendor created the tool, your business is responsible for compliance. Review contracts, require testing documentation, and ensure vendors certify compliance with the law. Step 3, conduct risk and impact assessments. Document how your AI tools work. Evaluate risks of bias and describe mitigation steps. Having this assessment ready is critical if questions arise. Step 4, notify and train. Employers must inform individuals when AI influences consequential decisions. Go beyond written notice and make sure staff can explain how AI fits into your process. Step 5, treat compliance as strategy. The law is not just a compliance hurdle, it is a chance to lead. Businesses that prioritize fairness and transparency will stand out in competitive markets. When regulations shift, the companies that respond strategically, not reactively, are the ones that thrive. Treating compliance as part of long-term planning builds both trust and resilience. February 2026 may seem far off, but early preparation means fewer surprises and a stronger competitive position. The Colorado AI Act challenges businesses to build systems that are not only powerful, but also fair and responsible. Our next article is titled, Thompson Thrift Starts Work on Maverick Apartments in Monument, dated November 14, 2025. Thompson Thrift has begun construction on the Maverick, a 300-unit multifamily community in the Monument area north of Colorado Springs, the company announced this week. The first residents are expected to move in by February 2027. Monument has significant demand for the luxury multifamily living options that Thompson Thrift is known for delivering, said Josh Purvis, managing director for Thompson Thrift Residential. We are excited that the Maverick will meet that growing need by offering quality living spaces and amenities that will positively impact future residents and the community. The project sits on nearly 18 acres at 1300 Higbee Road with easy access to Interstate 25. Plans call for three-story garden-style buildings offering one, two, and three-bedroom units. Apartments will feature quartz countertops, stainless steel appliances, hardwood-style flooring, tile backsplashes, full-size washers and dryers, detached garages, and balconies or patios. Some units will include private yard options. Amenities will include a 24-hour fitness center, bike storage and workshop, heated resort-style pool, community grilling stations, an outdoor game area, pet spa, billiards, shuffleboard, and a resident conference room with focus suites. The location is surrounded by outdoor recreation, including Pike National Forest, multiple regional and state parks and golf courses within a short drive. Nearby restaurants and retailers include the Home Depot, Kohl's, Walmart, Starbucks, and Texas Roadhouse. Jackson Landing, a planned retail-anchored development 1 mile south of the site, will bring new stores and restaurants in the coming years. Monument, situated in the northwest portion of the Colorado Springs metro area, is home to one of the state's top-ranked public school systems, according to Niche.com. The community also offers access to major employment centers in Colorado Springs, Fort Carson, and South Denver, including the U.S. Air Force Academy, USAA Financial Center, Progressive Insurance, and UC Health Memorial Hospital North. Economic activity in the region has been on the rise. Since 2022, 23 companies have announced expansion plans in the Colorado Springs metropolitan area, adding more than 4,000 jobs and more than $2 billion in capital investment. Thompson Thrift, founded nearly 40 years ago, has invested more than $6 billion in communities across the Midwest, Southeast, and Southwest. Equity capital for the Maverick will be provided through Thompson Thrift 2025 Multifamily Development LP. Our next article is titled, FAA Keeps Flight Cuts at 6% as More Controllers Return to Work, dated November 13, 2025. Flight reductions at 40 major U.S. airports will remain at 6% instead of rising to 10% by the end of the week because more air traffic controllers are coming to work, officials said Wednesday. The announcement was made as Congress took steps to end the longest government shutdown in history. Not long after, Donald Trump signed a government funding bill to end the closure. The flight cuts were implemented last week as more air traffic controllers were calling out of work, citing stress and the need to take on second jobs, and leaving more control towers and facilities short-staffed. Air traffic controllers missed two paychecks during the impasse. The Department of Transportation said the flight reduction decision was made on recommendations from the Federal Aviation Administration's safety team after a rapid decline in controller callouts. The 6% limit will stay in place while officials assess whether the air traffic system can safely return to normal operations, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said, although he did not provide a timeline Wednesday. If the FAA safety team determines the trend lines are moving in the right direction, we'll put forward a path to resume normal operations, Duffy said in a statement. Duffy and FAA Administrator Brian Bedford said Wednesday that safety remains their top priority and that all decisions will be guided by data. Delta struck an optimistic note about how much longer flight reductions would continue, saying in a statement the airline looked forward to bringing its operation back to full capacity over the next few days. Since the restrictions took effect last Friday, more than 10,100 flights have been canceled, according to the flight tracking site FlightAware. The FAA originally planned to ramp up flight cuts from 4% to 10% at the 40 airports. The FAA said that worrisome safety data showed flight reductions were needed to ease pressure on the aviation system and help manage worsening staffing shortages at its air traffic control facilities as flight disruptions began to pile up. Duffy has declined to share the specific safety data that prompted the flight cuts. But at a news conference Tuesday at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport, he cited reports of planes getting too close in the air, more runway incursions, and pilot concerns about controllers' responses. The FAA's list of 40 airports spans more than two dozen states and includes large hubs such as New York, Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Chicago. The order requires all commercial airlines to make cuts at those airports. Airlines for America, the trade group of U.S. airlines, posted on social media that it was grateful for the funding bill. It said reopening the government would allow U.S. airlines to restore operations ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday, which is in 2 weeks. How long it will take for the aviation system to stabilize is unclear. The flight restrictions upended airline operations in just a matter of days. Many planes were rerouted and aren't where they're supposed to be. Airlines for America said earlier Wednesday that there would be residual effects for days. Eric Chaffee, a Case Western Reserve professor who studies risk management, says airlines face complex hurdles, including rebuilding flight schedules that were planned months in advance. Airline and hotel trade groups had earlier Wednesday urged the House to act quickly to end the shutdown, warning of potential holiday travel chaos. Flight cuts disrupted other flights and crews, leading to more cancellations than the FAA required at first. The impact was worsened by unexpected controller shortages over the weekend and severe weather. The CEO of the U.S. Travel Association said the essential federal workers like air traffic controllers and Transportation Security Administration workers must be paid if Congress ever goes down this foolish path again and there is a shutdown. America cannot afford another self-inflicted crisis that threatens the systems millions rely on every day, Jeff Freeman said in a statement. Our next article is titled, Dow Sets New Record as Tech Losses Weigh on Broader Market, dated November 12, 2025. The Dow Jones Industrial Average reached another record even as drops elsewhere in the market kept other indexes in check. The Dow rose 0.7% Wednesday, adding to the all-time high it set a day earlier. The S&P 500 edged up 0.1% and remains near its all-time high set a couple weeks ago. Treasury yields eased in the bond market. The NASDAQ Composite fell 0.3%. Advanced Micro Devices jumped after forecasting strong growth over the coming years driven by AI. AI stocks have been shaky recently as investors question whether they can add much more to their already spectacular gains. Their sensational performances have been among the top reasons the U.S. market has hit record highs despite a slowing job market and high inflation. Their prices have shot so high, though, that critics say they're reminiscent of the 2000.com bubble, which ultimately burst and dragged the S&P 500 down by nearly half. NVIDIA came into the day with a 4.6% drop for the month so far, for example, after its stock price more than doubled in four of the last 5 years. The biggest player in AI chips swung between gains and losses on Wednesday. Palantir Technologies, another AI darling, fell 4.5% for one of the day's largest losses in the S&P 500. Similar questions about priciness are dogging the rest of the U.S. market, though other stocks aren't getting as much criticism as big tech and AI superstars. One way for stock prices to look less expensive is for companies to deliver big growth in profits. On Holdings jumped 18.7% after the Swiss shoe and apparel company reported a much bigger profit for the latest quarter than analysts expected. It reported growth in sales worldwide, particularly in Asia. But even beating expectations may not be enough for some stocks. Circle Internet Group fell 11.3%, even though it reported a profit for the latest quarter that trounced analysts' estimates. The stock price of the issuer of one of the most popular cryptocurrencies has been generally falling since it reached nearly $300 in June, just a few weeks after its initial offering price of $31. It's now below $88. Another way for stock prices to look less expensive is if interest rates fall. That's because bonds paying lower yields can encourage investors to pay higher prices for other investments. In the U.S. bond market, the yield on the 10-year Treasury eased to 4.06% from 4.13% late Monday after trading resumed following Tuesday's Veterans Day holiday. Traders still see a nearly 2-in-3 chance that the Federal Reserve will cut its main interest rate at its next meeting in December, according to data from CME Group. That's despite Fed Chair Jerome Powell saying a third cut for the year is far from a sure thing. Fed officials are worried about the potential of giving still high inflation more fuel. The Fed has been in a difficult spot recently because the U.S. government has not been publishing its usual updates on the job market, inflation, and other areas of the economy. That's restricted its view of how things are going, though the nation's longest ever shutdown came to an end. In the global stock markets, indexes rose across much of Europe and Asia. Germany's DAX returned 1.2%, and South Korea's KOSPI jumped 1.1% for two of the world's biggest gains. Our next article is titled, Government Reopens, But Economic Uncertainty Lingers. What Consumers Should Know. Dated November 13, 2025. After a 43-day shutdown, the longest in U.S. history, the government is reopening, but the effects are far from over. Key economic reports on jobs, inflations, and retail sales remain delayed, and in some cases may never be released, leaving policymakers and businesses to make decisions about a clear picture of the economy. The White House said Wednesday it was unlikely that key federal inflation and labor reports affected by the shutdown would be released, although September's employment data collected before the shutdown is expected to come out soon. The added uncertainty comes as new tariffs on imported goods could push up prices on everything from toys and electronics to clothing heading into the holidays. CU Boulder Today caught up with Edward Van Wiesep, professor and chair of the finance division at the Leeds School of Business, to discuss what the loss of economic data means for consumer confidence and spending as the holiday season ramps up and how uncertainty could linger even as federal operations resume. Question. Let's start with the big picture. What is an economic data blackout, and what happens when it lifts? Answer. The government normally collects key economic numbers, like jobs and prices, by surveying households, businesses, and stores. A shutdown can pause these surveys, delaying official reports on employment and consumer prices. When we don't have those numbers, either we're in a complete blackout or we try to use substitutes for the government data. Online data can help, but it only covers part of the market. Private estimates, like ADP payroll reports, which track wages for about 20% of U.S. workers, fill some of the gaps, but without government data, these estimates can drift from reality, especially in sectors like government work that are heavily affected by a shutdown. Question: why should everyday consumers care that these reports were delayed? Answer: if you're deciding what to buy at the grocery store, it might not matter much. But economic forecasters and regulators, like the Fed, rely on these numbers to make decisions. Businesses use them to plan investments, productions, and hiring. When numbers are missing, uncertainty rises. Without current data, interest rates may not reflect real economic conditions, which can affect big-ticket purchases like cars and homes. Question: how do tariffs factor into that uncertainty? Answer: tariffs on low-end consumer goods are likely raising prices. A tariff is a tax on imports, and all taxes get split between buyers and sellers based on something called elasticities of demand and supply. These describe how much people and companies cut back when they face cost increases. Foreign exporters of low-end consumer goods have very little space to absorb a tax, so U.S. consumers end up paying more. Companies selling these goods here, like Walmart and its suppliers, also have very little room to absorb tariffs, so consumers are likely to bear the burden. It's not uniform, though. Powerful foreign exporters, such as those making iPhones and semiconductors, have space to absorb U.S. costs, as do U.S. sellers of these goods. Consumers probably won't feel as much of a pinch for these goods. But the point is that we just don't know how prices of any of these goods are changing because governmental statistical agencies aren't releasing data. Proxies from private organizations help, but government data completes the picture. Question: with the government reopening, what does the broader picture look like for holiday spending? Answer: it's worth pointing out that aggregate consumer spending doesn't ever fall dramatically, COVID-19 pandemic aside. Even in the Great Recession, spending dropped less than 2.5%. But small drops in aggregate mask large effects for people experiencing unemployment or financial stress while most people go about their business. The labor market has been awful for over 6 months, and in the first two quarters, the economy was weak. We just don't know how weak it has been since June. These numbers haven't been released. We have estimates, but they're all over the place. It seems that the bottom 80% are suffering and the top earners are carrying the economy. That's probably bad news for most retailers and companies serving the mass market. Question: could continued uncertainty make consumers rely more on credit? Answer: consumers are already relying on credit. During the pandemic, personal savings spiked while credit card debt dropped. Now, savings are lower and credit card debt is higher. People are already spending money that they don't have, which worries firms because if most of your consumers are spending money they don't have, at some point they will probably stop. Question: now that the shutdown is over, how should consumers and businesses think about the economy? Answer: the economy right now is a mystery. It was a mystery even before the shutdown, given huge swings in imports and inventories surrounding the tariffs. Missing or delayed data makes it hard to know how labor markets, gross domestic product growth, and consumer spending are holding up now. Add in factors like tariffs, which may soon be temporarily banned by the Supreme Court, and it becomes even harder for businesses and consumers to gauge what's really happening. This concludes this week's edition of Colorado Business Digest, narrated by Mike Hesser.
Save the date. Disney's Frozen, December 10th 13th and 17th, 2025. Experience the magic of Frozen with audio-described performances at the Arvada Center's Main Stage Theater. Choose from three accessible showtimes. Wednesday, December 10th at 1 p.m. Saturday, December 13th at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, December 17th at 1 p.m. The Arvada Center is located at 6901 Wadsworth Boulevard, Arvada, Colorado. For tickets or accessibility arrangements, call the box office at 720-898-7200.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.